Ridiculous thing I heard recently. It was like Sega selling like a remastered like Sonic Origins collection, which okay. like that's fine,
right?
But some of the like a piece of the DLC includes like new menu screen skins.
Whoa!
I recently was burned by a bad video game, the Evil Dead game.
Oh, which one?
Believe the Hype. None of the good ones from the PS2 era. The one that just came out.
Oh, there was one that just came out.
Yes, okay. Yeah. It was by the same people who made the they only do one thing. They made the Jason game.
Okay.
But they were like, there's a one player campaign mode on this one, so it's not all, and it's like not a one. There really isn't.
So I remember there was an Evil Dead game that I rented that was for the Dreamcast.
Oh, that was that Fistful of Boomstick?
I think so.
Some of the two from like the it early wasn't aughts. Good. I liked them. One was better than the other. One was like a $30, like, not a very long game. Yeah. But then there was one, the first one was good.
Okay.
Well, welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Mr. Vin Forte.
What's going on?
Vin, how are you?
I'm doing good. I just came off of watching a bunch of highlights of funny announcers.
Yeah, really?
I was watching, like, every once in a while, getting a hole, and it's Friday afternoon when we're recording this, so, like,
mm-hmm.
like let me look for some fun content on YouTube instead of getting stuck into, like, depressing wormholes.
Sure.
Like we all do. Because, like, you know what you do. You go on YouTube, and you're like, oh, let me look up this video on quicksand, and then 20 minutes later...
quicksand.
And 20 minutes later, you're watching a documentary about how, like, it was like the Donner Party, but in quicksand. It's yeah, like, what am yeah, I doing? Yeah. Like, I yeah, outside.
The algorithm always goes dark.
But I ended up watching a bunch of compilations of, like, basketball announcers that are, like, way too into what's going on. It's usually, like, these low-market teams.
Oh, boy.
Where, like, I was watching
They're trying to sell the hype.
They're trying to sell it. Like, I was watching this one guy for, like, the Charlotte Hornets. And, like, every little thing they do, like, this guy's like, whoa! Look at him go! And I'm just like... Like someone will do an uncontested basket, and this guy will be like, Hiddledy-dee! And I'm like, why? Hiddledy-dee? Like, what? He's like, Terry Rozier, how do you do? It's like, you are way... Like, you would have thought someone sucked this guy's balls off his body.
Yeah, I mean... The energy's got to come from somewhere,
right?
So you got to be the guy who brings the energy.
But you know what the best part was? The highlights I was looking at were all like from a year and a half ago when they could be in the stadiums again, but like no one could be in there.
Oh, maybe that was it. That could be it.
That was a weird time because you had the people, like I was just saying, who were trying to overexcite things and get people into it. But then you had people who like couldn't be in the stadium, so they had a weird mic setup. So yeah. Like you could hear Marv Albert do like national games, but like you could hear him. It sounded like he was like chewing gum the whole time.
Oh boy!
And he just wasn't like that enthused to begin with. So with no crowd noise, it was just like pass, mix number pass. Like,
he's alive, Marv Albert.
He just retired.
Oh, okay, good for him. Let's take us back to the year 1996, and we're here today on PCMC to talk about Kids in the Hole, Brain Candy.
What's that?
Well, kids, I'll tell you. The Kids in the Hole was a important comedy troupe from Canada in the 90s. They had an HBO show, which I don't ever think about as an HBO show. I always think about it as on Comedy Central. But there was also, I remember very like short while where they would play it like after Apollo. Like SNL, Apollo, and then the real cretins would stay up for Kids in the Hole. Which Kids in the Hole is produced by Lorne Michaels.
Yeah.
And the villain of the film is
Lorne Michaels.
Right. This is a year, by the way, before Austin Powers comes out, where the villain is also an impression of Lorne Michaels. So all these people say they love Lorne Michaels, yet look how often he shows up as the villain. Yeah. So they were a sketch comedy troupe. If you don't know their stuff, there's some of it's just weird. You know, there's a sort of Monty Python-ish of sometimes you're not going to laugh. You're just going to be like, what the fuck was that?
But that's like part of the deal.
Right, right, right. You know, I think part of the deal for sketch comedy is it's all about a batting average, right? Like, I mean, it's never going to be home run, home run, home run. Never.
No, because you're throwing out, like, the point is to get out the ideas. And, like, without getting out the ideas, like... Like, if you played it safe,
yeah,
you just wouldn't even have a show. You would have no batting average.
Right, right. And there are some sketches that I think are some of the best sketches ever. The Citizen Kane sketch, which is just a simple sketch of two guys sitting at a deli, and one guy's like, oh, I saw this movie last night. Oh, really? What was it? I don't know. It was this old black and white movie. It was about this newspaper tycoon. Oh, it was Citizen Kane. No, that wasn't it. Anyway, he was played by Orson Welles. Citizen Kane. No. And it just keeps going on, and he just keeps describing Citizen Kane. And then the friend goes, it's Citizen Kane. And he's like, no, that's not what it was. Until, you know, there's never a good way to end the sketch. So it ends with the frustrated friend just stabbing the other friend in the chest. that's a great sketch. Anything Buddy Love... Did.
Yes, Scott Thompson.
Scott Thompson. Yeah, we should say the kids.
Anytime he would get gay, because he is gay, and he would be like, this is that era where
gay was punk in a way.
Yeah, like there were whole episodes where, or whole sketches where the whole point of it was basically him, him getting to say the word faggot on television.
Yeah, I saw a season one episode. Season one sketch. Like yesterday, where like he's just a guy walking outside, and he's in, I don't know what kind of like,
oh, the feminine kid, and the person drives past like gay.
No, it's a kid. It's a kid on a bike. Yeah, a kid on a bike, and he says the F word, and then he's like, and he goes back in, and he like wears a suit, and the kid comes out, and he says it again.
But then the third time he comes out, and he's wearing like a leather outfit.
Right, right, right. And then he eventually like chirps the kid.
The ending is he dresses up as a bear and mauls the kid.
Right, right.
And then he takes the head off and he calls the kid a faggot.
Right, right. It's amazing. By the way, Vin can say that. I can't. In case you... So put your tweets down.
Yeah, I'm the designated faggot right now.
But you know what's funny? Well, let's talk about the five of them. Dave Foley, Bruce McCullough, Kevin McDonald, Mark McKinney, and Scott Thompson. Scott Thompson's the only one who's gay, but somehow his queerness brought a queer aesthetic to the whole show.
Yeah, like not the least of which the fact that they all did drag, but even today looking back, it like very little of it was actually played in like a fey way. Like right. The joke is not that they're in drag. The joke is just
the sketch needs a woman.
Yeah, the
right.
sketch needs a woman, and they're gonna play that role.
Yeah, that's what's sort of incredible, because it's like the woman would only be like silly if they needed to be silly for the sketch, but often they would just play the women straight, and
sometimes honestly, if you were just showing someone like a certain sketch for the first time, they'd be like, "Oh, who's that woman?"
Right. Well, I was just watching. They just came out with a documentary called Comedy Punks. That was about their history, and it's a talking head documentary, and a lot of the other people were like, you know, that Dave Foley when he was pretty hot when he was a girl. Some of it's so understated, but Scott Thompson, well, he had the Buddy Love character, which was a monologue character. He would do these really outrageous monologues.
Yeah, picture Billy Crystal's Fernando character, but like actually funny.
Yes, yes. And those were outrageous. And there is a sort of queerness to them in every sense of the word. Like, this is not SNL. Like, the famous story is Lorne Michaels went to see, he sent his goons to see them, he might have been with them, and he was like, oh, these guys are so good, which one do I take? And he hired two to be writers, and that kind of fizzled out. And then they got back together and were performing, and then Lorne Michaels made a deal with the Canadian Broadcast Channel and HBO, mm-hmm. and so they would co-produce it, and he would be like the showrunner. And he was like, you guys just do you, because you can't do SNL, so
yeah,
just do
like, he was
you.
Basically there to be the money behind,
right?
Like getting them to America.
He was smart enough to see them and be like, these guys aren't SNL, but they are something incredible together.
Yeah.
But the sort of what's a lot of people consider the downside of their oeuvre, which I don't, is in 1996, their show ended, but they made their first and now only feature film, which was called Brain Candy. And the thought at the time was they're going to go the route of the Monty Python. Like, this is their first movie, and then they're just going to do more and more movies. And the movies will be one story, but they'll play a million different characters in the movies. But this movie was super, super dark humor. Darker than even it's often went on the show. And it had a tiny little limited release.
Yeah.
Which the lore of it, which I don't know if you could trust the IMDb. Apparently on IMDb trivia, somebody wrote that the character Cancer Boy, who is exactly what you think he is. He's
a cancer boy. He's in a wheelchair.
Bruce McCullough with bald head, like in a chair, just being like a sad little boy. And some executive at the studio was like, I'm really offended by this. You have to take this out. And the kids at home were like, no. And he was like, all right, fine. Then you get a limited release. So some people think that decision alone, that fighting and dying on that hill, is what fucked the whole movie.
I mean, it seems like it's a classic case where there's a lot that probably contributed to the movie getting a limited release.
Oh, I'm sure. But we should say limited release then is not like it is now, because 1996, the internet is not what it is now. So, like, there's really no buzz. Like, first of all, they were never huge to begin with. Like, only comedy nerds knew them.
Right. Today, if they got a limited release, it'd be like
an A24 movie. It'd be like, oh, let's go see this, you know.
Yeah, or like, hey, let me mark my calendar. This is going to drop on, you know, Paramount Plus or Amazon.
Right. It would be limited release theater and hit streaming the same day.
But if you wanted to see it then, like, you had to kind of, like, I saw it at a theater, but I, you know, we live in New York City.
Yeah.
So there was a good chance that, okay, me, you know, it's not going to be everywhere, but there's going to be one screen in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Or in your town that'll have it.
I want to hear your story, because with my story, I was a big, I got really into them when they played them after school on Comedy Central, and I loved it, and I was obsessed with it. And then they were like, the movie's coming out so-and-so date, and I marked it on my calendar, and I was like, I can't wait, I am so hyped for this movie. And then it came out, and I looked at the newspaper, and it was not in any theater, and I was heartbroken, and I was like, why? It's supposed to come out. And that's when I learned about what a limited release is.
Okay.
And then finally, a few weeks later, it hit one screen on the local multiplex. I was a kid. I was like 13. I begged my mother to take me and my younger brother. The three of us were the only people in the theater, and my mother fell asleep.
That's kind of a similar story to mine. Like, I was a couple years younger, but
yeah,
still, again, loved them on Comedy Central.
Of course.
Because every day, like, you'd come home, and you'd have two things you could always rely on that were on Comedy Central in the afternoon when you get home.
Whose line?
Well, actually, no. Okay, three things.
Okay, sorry.
Mystery Science Theater.
Oh, of course.
Whose line? And then you would have Kids in the Hall. And there would be a big block of Kids in the Hall on the afternoon.
Yeah, you bet.
I think that's honestly like where most people saw it. It wasn't HBO.
I think so, too. I think so, too.
But it was a very similar, honestly, a very similar situation to the Mystery Science Theater movie.
Right. Where I think that's very similar to, yeah.
Where that was true. Also a limited release, and it was like, well, where the hell can I see it? But for as far as Kids in the Hall, I went with a friend who I had to, like, sell on seeing the movie, because I was into Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
And he was not. And he was just like, well, why? I'm like, no, it's going to be funny. Like, these guys are great. I even tried to hard sell him at the time on, like, oh, they dress up like ladies, and it's funny. Like, I even tried to pull that angle.
Yeah.
But, like, my mom took us there to the theater that it's an LA Fitness now, but it used to be, you know, the one I'm talking about.
Yes, I do, yeah.
And we went there. We were one of the only people in there.
Of course, yes.
And he hated it. Like, my mom dropped us off.
Yeah.
He hated it. Almost left several times. He was like, this is boring.
Oh, God.
I'm like, no, it's fine. Like,
did you like it?
I liked it, but I admit it was not like a laugh riot.
Yeah, I too liked it, but remember feeling it dragging. Like,
To me, it wasn't even dragging. It was just like, this is even at a young age, I recognized that the show could be dark at times.
Yeah.
But this was like, there's concepts like going over my head.
Yeah.
And again, like, it wasn't Like, it's a real cerebral kind of movie. Like, it's not ha-ha funny all the time.
How was your relationship with your friend after this?
Oh, I drifted away from this friend, like, very quickly. It didn't really have anything to do with that, but, like, I guess you could read that situation as, like, an example of, like, why I drifted away from him. Like, we just took completely different paths.
So I remember around the time the movie was coming out, I was sleeping over a friend's house.
Oh, is this going to be like Scott Thompson was on Conan?
Yes. I've told you the story.
Yes.
Scott Thompson was on Conan, and I was like, first of all, I was always the kid at the sleepover that was like, we got to watch Letterman, we got to watch Conan. While the other kids were like, I want to play Mega Man 3. And I'm like, you're going to fucking watch the top 10 list and shut up about it. Of course the first one's not funny. It's never funny. That's not how it works. So I was like, oh, this guy's really funny. You know, I had to sell it. This guy's really funny. He's gonna be. And, you know, he's immediately like, you could obviously tell he's gay. And my friend was like categorically, this must not be good. Like, my friend was like, oh, he's gay. We can't watch this.
Yeah.
Why would you watch this? This guy's gay. And I was like, and it's not like I didn't know. I knew. But I was at least evolved enough as a child to be like, what the fuck was that? What does that matter? Like, yes, he's gay. Yeah. And he's funny. He's going to say funny things. And it was one of the first times I felt like cool in a sense. I felt like I'm cooler than this kid.
I get something that this kid doesn't.
This kid's not on my level.
Like a weird gatekeeping.
Yeah.
You do find that with Kids in the Hall. Like, honestly, and I'm not into gatekeeping. Like, I would show someone Kids in the Hall now in a heartbeat if they didn't know about it.
Yeah.
But I think there are some people out there who, like, a big litmus test is, like, are you a fan of Kids in the Hall?
Right, yeah.
And some people have been like, no, I've heard of them. I don't really know.
Well, that's not gatekeeping, because I feel like gatekeeping is when someone says they're a fan and you try to stop them. And you're like, no, you're not a fan. It's another thing to be like, hey, are you hip to this thing? Because if you are, then you and me are brothers, and I respect your point of view. If you're not, then fine. You know, because I feel like nowadays a lot of people have no idea what the Kids in the Hall are, or at least younger people. But then there are a lot of people that love them.
Right. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, like we were saying, like an example of how, like, because we keep saying, oh, they could be dark at times, like they could broach topics that, like, SNL just never would. One of my favorite sketches is there's a sketch where it's in black and white, and they talk about, like, oh, philosophers for generations have, like, fought about the question of, does God exist?
Yeah.
And then it's revealed that, yes, there is a God, but he's dead.
Yeah, okay.
Like, God did exist, but now he's dead.
Yeah.
But they play it off as almost like a 1950s training film, so
that's fine.
And they show God, and they show some guy holding him. He's like, he's really light.
Yeah. That's hilarious.
Like, a nation mourns.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to, like, and then the nation moves on.
Yeah.
On the highways that God built.
Like. Yeah. Not to sound like some kind of neckbeard guy, but there were sketches on that show that you were not supposed to laugh at. They were still comedy.
Right.
But it wasn't made for you to chuckle at. It was made for you to be like, that's fucking weird. Or, like, well, that's something rare to see on TV. We just saw a gay man maul a child in a bear suit.
Well, because much like what Letterman brought to comedy in the 80s, some of it is the novelty of they gave us airtime, and now we're going to show you this.
Right.
Like, now that kind of gets a little lost because fucking go on YouTube and see anything.
Right. It's not precious. Being able to publish content is not as precious as it was.
Right. But, like, if someone gave you one of the five comedy shows that were on the air at the time, and now you're going to, you know, choose to do a really weird Dr. Seuss sketch where you nail the Cat in the Hat to a cross.
Right. Yeah. Like, I was watching I was watching some of season one recently. And there was just this, like, monologue bit. They do some monologue bits where they just talk to the audience. Where Dave Foley comes out and he's like, hey, guys, I've got some exciting news. I found the cause of cancer. And everyone claps. He's like, you want to see the cause of cancer? And then Bruce McCullough comes out and he's like, Bruce, do you have something to say? And he's like, I'm sorry I caused all that cancer. And he's like, say it like you mean it. I'm sorry I caused all that cancer. And it's just the stupidest thing. It's a complete waste of everybody's time. it's offensive. And it's like, what even is the bit? Like, it's rhetorical? Is it like, we're looking at different meanings of the word cause. Like, what is the... It's like, sometimes it's like, what was the joke here? Which is fine.
Yeah.
It's surreal, right? It's a they're surreal kind of comedy. But let's talk about the movie. What is the premise of the movie?
So the premise of the movie is basically there's a big shadowy company run by basically Lorne Michaels.
Right.
And Dave Foley plays his little henchman. They hire basically a group of people, scientists, led by, like, ostensibly the protagonist is Kevin McDonald.
Yeah.
And they create a drug called Gleeman X.
Yeah.
Which is basically, the whole movie is a take on Prozac.
Right.
Which was huge at the time because it was like, hey, take this pill.
Yeah.
And you'll be happy. So the point of the drug, which leads to the conceit of the movie, is that you take this drug and you go into basically a coma of your favorite memory.
Yeah, and you become a mindless drone.
Yeah.
See, this is another reason why it doesn't hold up. Because this movie is so 90s in its ideology. Like, I take Prozac, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very 90s thing to be antidepressants. To be like, antidepressants, man. Like, there's a grunge character in the film, and he's like, hey, and he's talking to the audience, he's like, I heard there's a drug out there that's supposed to make you happy. I'm here to say, fuck happy. And everyone cheers. You know, because this movie's very, like, it's grungy. The villains are giant corporations. And one of the villains is a marketing guy.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, the things we're making fun of are celebrities and big pharma. And it's all very in that 90s ideology.
Oh, yeah, but also, the conceit of the movie leads to, and this is, I think, where you talk about, like, okay, where did the movie fall apart kind of marketing-wise?
Yeah.
Is the whole thing is a conceit to then, okay, like, now we're going to show, you know, a large chunk of the movie is made up of, okay, someone takes a drug, you look into their head. Someone else takes a drug, right, you look into their head.
Their happiest memory ends up being a format for sketches. Right. Yeah.
And some of those sketches are not funny and not supposed to be.
Right.
Some of them are funny, and some of them are like a weird whatever category.
I think the best, first of all, my favorite character in the movie is Mrs. Herdecure, played by Scott Thompson. And Miss Herdecure's memory is, I think, the funniest part of the movie. And it's just look it up on YouTube, because it's one shot. So it's perfectly choreographed with three adult actors and two children and multiple rooms. It's her happiest memory. It's so funny that this is her happiest memory. Her happiest memory is her son comes over. He rings the doorbell. She comes to the door. I'm coming. And it's Christmas. Hey, Mom. Sorry, a few hours late. You know, the kids hate old people. Oh, that's great. And then the kids start running around and, like, being assholes immediately. And he's like, Mom, I heard Dad's dead. That's too bad. And he's like, oh, yeah. Well, the turkey. Let me get the turkey from the oven. And this is all one shot. And then one of the kids comes up with a present. And he's like, I asked for this last year, dummy. And he throws it at her. And the mother's like, oh. And the grandmother's like, oh, I'm sorry. And then he's like, oh, Mom, I got to go. He, like, takes a shot of scotch. Yeah,
like, the dad, like, Dave Foley as a dad is there for, like, 10 seconds.
Right. He's like, oh, we got to go. And then they leave. And she's got the turkey. And she's like, oh, that was lovely. That sadness was her best memory.
Right.
Which is, but it's so well choreographed. And I
but again, if you're watching the movie and not really paying attention,
right,
you watch that scene and you're like, where's the funny?
Right. The guy came in and left quick. Is that the joke? And it's like, kind
of. It's like, but that again, like, goes back to the old Leslie Nielsen thing of, like, some things fail because you actually have to watch.
Right. You have to get that this is supposed to be her happiest memory, but it's clearly a bummer. You have to get that it's exciting that it's all done in one image, and you have to listen to what the kids are saying. Like, at one point, the mother's like, all right, we gotta go, here you go, here's a present, and it's like, it's just a little thing. She's like, oh, I wonder what that is. She's like, it's a harmonica. And she's like, oh, okay. It's like, why would she give her,
like, they're like, going back to the gay, like, there are people's happiest memories in this movie of, like, their gay fantasies, like, in the army.
Yeah. Well, that's another one of my favorite characters. I should say right off the bat, my favorite kid was always Scott Thompson.
Yeah.
I always found him the funniest. I loved everything he did. I loved his characters. And another reoccurring character in this film is Wally, who, this is another really funny conceit. He's a deeply closeted gay man with a family, But the joke is nobody believes it. He thinks he's doing it, yeah. And his wife and kids just know that he's gay. Like, he's upstairs masturbating the gay porn, and the mother comes in, and she's like, hey, kids, where's your dad? And the daughter's like, oh, he's upstairs masturbating the gay porn. And she's like, oh, again. And then, like, he takes, like, he hears the wife comes in, so he puts a cup of water on his face. He's like, oh, I just got out of the shower. How you doing, honey? And she's like, how are you doing? Like, it's just so funny that it's like nobody for a second buys it.
Oh, and I love the montage, or like the musical number at the end where he's like, I'm gay.
I'm gay.
He's gay.
Oh, and then he goes, I'm gay. And his kids high five.
He is gay.
I'm gay. Hey, he's gay. I used to be straight, and now I'm gay. I think the drug made me that way. He's gay. He's gay.
Like, people doing cartwheels and backflips in the street. Like,
hilarious, hilarious.
Or the army one's my favorite, where he's like, you go over there, you fuck him in the ass, now stay here and masturbate.
You, yes, sir.
And then he runs away, he's got, like,
you see his ass.
He's got, like, no chaps on his ass.
Oh, yeah. Well, so let's talk a little bit about the structure, because this is where I think it falls apart a little bit.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was getting to before. Yeah. Like, it's one of those movies where, like, 20% of it is setting up.
Yeah.
The conceit about you take the drug, you get the memory thing.
Yeah.
And then the whole middle of the film is, that's where it's like, okay, well, we're going to do Kids in the Hall style. That's where we're going to do, like, vignette.
Yeah.
Then it comes back around at the end.
Right.
But it always feels like there's something, like, I could see being an executive and watching it.
Yes.
Being like, there's something missing here.
There's definitely something missing. You know, when I was watching it as an adult, to prepare for this episode, I thought, you know what this actually reminds me of? And this is a weird comparison. It reminds me of Soviet montage films, because those films were like, obviously they were like, they were silent and they were very, very, you know, there was a lot of like crazy
propaganda.
Imagery. Yeah, but they were communist. And the whole thing was capitalism is about the individual. So therefore, communism is about the group. Mm. So having one protagonist is anti-communist. So, you know, the whole town is the protagonist.
Right.
And that's kind of what you have in this. Like, kind of the scientists are the lead guys, but they're not, because they don't have that much more screen time than everything.
No, they're there to set everything up, but yeah. That's about it.
Right, there's really, like, a couple of different characters. The scientists, Miss Herdecure, the grunge singer, the gay dad. Like, it's like in montage style, it's like ABC, ABC, ABC. You just keep checking in with them.
Right.
And seeing how they're reacting to things. Where, like, you could see someone being like, well, why don't you, all right, this guy's the lead character. Why don't we show him at home? Why don't we show, let's show his life before becoming
right.
famous.
Why are we going back to this gay dad?
Right. Like, who was our lead character? You know?
Is it Miss Hercule, who gets the very last scene in the movie where her grandson flies away in a balloon?
Which is her least good memory. Yeah, yeah.
The movie had an, I don't know if you've ever seen the alternate end, like the original ending.
No, what's the original ending?
So the original ending is basically, it was much darker. I could see why they, like,
really, because I think the
it.
Ending as it is kind of dark.
Well, the original ending is basically Cooper ends up taking the Gleeman X, and like the whole world ends up basically like trapped in this stupor where everything's their happiest memory.
See, that does kind of happen. But in the film as it is now, the villain's trying to make him take it, but he fakes it. He puts it in his mouth and pretends to swallow, and then he spits it into the villain's mouth.
Michael's mouth.
Yeah, and the villain takes it. And the world does become this sort of utopia, dystopia of happy drones.
But they kind of cut the difference, because there's half the people didn't take it.
Right, and our heroes lived.
Yeah.
And they're underground trying to create a pill that'll make you depressed to try to fix the world.
Yes.
So it's still a dystopia story, because it's also weirdly narrated by this Croatian cab driver.
And then it just ends, and you're just like, that's the end of the movie.
Yeah. Get the fuck out of the way. Yeah. Move away for a real human. Because he refuses to take it, because he says it's made with monkey cum.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a whole scene in the movie where people are saying, like, you know it's made of monkey cum, right?
Like, yeah, they get the monkeys to jack off. They show them real kinky shit, like two dogs fucking a cat or like a pig and a bat. But, you know, you can easily see somebody who has no idea what this is being like, Are these all the same actors over and over again? And also, who am I rooting for?
Just in a broad sense, like, I can see someone getting halfway through this movie and be like, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah. And I should say, I think the first half is way tighter. The first half holds together so much more than the second half, I think.
Yeah, because again, you're setting things up, you're introducing characters, like, and then the third act, again, it does drag a little bit. Because again, you're rechecking in on people. So you...
If you get the rhythm again. You get the rhythm, like, okay, we're going to see this guy again, and then that guy again.
Right, like, if I have one major complaint with the movie is that I wish they would have almost had more characters. Like, I wish they almost would have committed to, like, okay, we saw this one person, now they're done for the movie. Now we're going to see another person, now they're done for the movie.
So another part of the story, which I think leads to some of the weaknesses of the film, is... you know, they were a troupe that was together for a long time, and by the time they got to the movie, Dave Foley, who was, in many people's eyes, the leader, because he was, he did other things, and he was the best looking, he was like, I don't want to do this anymore, but he was contractually obligated to do it. So, he's in the film, but he plays far less characters than the other four, he doesn't interact that much with the other four, and he's actually the only kid without a writing credit. So for the kids of the whole movie, it feels like one big part of it's not truly there. Like
he's there enough that you wouldn't necessarily notice it.
Right. But in the sketch show, he really worked really well with Kevin MacDonald, who plays the main scientist. But in the film, the only times they ever like really interact is when Dave Foley, as like the villain's like stooge, will like come and be like, can I have 5 minutes with you, Marv? And they just have a scene where they're on an elevator. Like, you don't have one of the main players really playing off everybody.
Yeah.
Which I didn't notice as a kid. I didn't put it together because he is in the movie. And apparently he didn't like the script, which was one of the reasons why he was like unhappy.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that was
But he loved the script for Death Comes to Town.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That was Death Comes to Town was a miniseries they did about 10 years ago, which was, they're making a comeback right now. They've got I guess you call it a reboot, a new season of a Kids in the Hall sketch show on Amazon. And I think it's actually very good.
It's, you're not the only one.
First it's good off, as it ever was. Really?
Yeah, like, it's great. Like, I watched it, and I was like, is it really as good as I'm thinking it is? And I went to Twitter, and, like, everyone was kind of just like... And, you know, Twitter will be the first thing to, like, rip something up. And most fans, I would say, are like, wow, this is really good.
Yeah, like, I was honestly... I was willing for it to be less good and still like it, but it's like, this is it.
It feels like if they kept doing seasons, and this is just, like the next season.
Right. So,
and they do an interesting thing, which is... They frame them coming back after so much time.
Yeah.
With the characters from Brain Candy.
Right. Because the first sketch is it's a yard sale and this young girl picks up a VHS of Brain Candy and she's like, "What's this? Is this that funny comedy show from the 90s?" And then it's Scott Thompson who's playing the guy who owns, like, who's running the sale. And he's like, "No, this is that bitter comedy show from the mid 90s. And she's like, I still want it. And he's like, it's just $1. So she gives him $1. And then, like, you see, like, magic come out. And he's like, the curse is lifted. Brain Candy finally broke even and made its money back. And then they, in the last episode of the original series, they got buried. So they come out of the grave. And there's a funny thing where Dave Foley's like, hey, am I still the cute one? And they're like, because they're all so much older now.
But the crazy thing in that first episode is that it is a big spoiler. So, like, if you really don't want to know anything, skip ahead a couple minutes. But they put it all out there. Like, you know they're not screwing around because one of the very first sketches they do is Dave Foley and Kevin MacDonald.
Yeah.
They get buck naked.
Full frontal nudity. Like, and these are old
around.
Men.
like old men, dicks flopping around. Yeah. Like,
I was like, whoa, way to really put it out there. Like,
yeah.
Right off the bat, like, we are not resting on our laurels at all.
Yeah, this isn't like that Bob and Dave thing that they did over at Netflix.
You know what, dude? I can't even judge it because I didn't even try it. I didn't even watch that, to be honest with you. Yeah, I mean, it's to do a revival of sketch thing is hard, but it's,
and they updated the intro like perfectly, like they
really fit.
Like it felt good. It felt authentic.
So the narrative currently is they're back, but really they actually got back together 10 years ago and put out Death Comes to Town, which was like a 5-part mini series that, similar to the movie, was one story.
Yeah,
I think that's where they go wrong. I think they've got to do sketches.
Mm.
They've got to do sketches. Because, you know, the problem with Brain Candy is it has the logic of a sketch. You know what I mean? Like, it's not character-driven. Yeah. It doesn't totally make sense. It's just big beats.
Yeah. Unless you're going to commit to... Like, that's what made... And I think they did an interview recently where I think Dave Foley was talking about how they probably should have, in hindsight, gone the Monty Python route. Yeah. Where they took, like, an old fairy tale...
Yeah.
And just sort of added their own spin on it. So that, like,
yeah,
you know, every place where the movie asks them to zig, they can zag and do something different.
But, you know, my favorite Monty Python movie is Meaning of Life, which is a sketch film. Mm. So I don't know. Not to say that I don't like Monty Python, but I think sketches work better in certain ways, you know?
Well, we'll never get to know unless they somehow, like, get another movie.
Right. I hope they do more of this Amazon show.
I hope they do too. It really works.
Yeah. So I was thinking yesterday, I was like, you know, there's something I can't put my finger on. There's some reason why these guys are so good. And then it finally occurred to me, and I want to know what your take is on this. Compared to most other sketch performers, these are good actors. These are actually good actors. Like, when Scott Thompson's playing Miss Herdicure, he's a young gay man playing, like, a 7-year-old woman, but he's really doing it.
Well, I think that I have a similar... It's about commitment.
Sure, yeah.
They commit to the characters, whereas you look at something even like SNL.
Yeah.
And you know a sketch is bad when people just don't give a fuck. And you can read when people don't give a fuck.
Right.
Like, the best sketches are when people commit. Like, look at all the classic characters in SNL history.
Yeah.
They're all gimmicks that people committed to.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, like imagine if Wayne's World happened.
Right.
Or, like, any other long-running character. And they were just sort of half-assing it, giggling through the sketch.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been a one and done.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like they all come from Canadian improv. Which, you know, obviously, like, Mike Myers came from and stuff. But there's something about them that I think is, like, we don't break. We'll go to the very fucking end. And also, like, we don't care that we're dressed like women. We're not going to try to wink at you and be like, haha, I know, I'm dressed as a woman, right?
Well, that's a big thing, too. They're not, again, going back to something like SNL. Yeah. Like, whenever someone on SNL would get into drag, you know.
Right.
The audience already was waiting for, you know, some other shoe to drop. Are they going to kiss someone? Ooh, like, what's going to happen?
Right.
Are they going to act, you know, like, what was that sketch in the mid-90s? The one with, the recurring one of, like, Adam Sandler, David Spade, and Chris Farley, where they were all, like, women working at, like, Elaine Bryant.
Right, yeah. The Gap Girls, yeah. Right.
And it's like, that was basically just, like, you wanted to see men dressed up as women acting not like
teenagers.
Women.
Yeah. Whereas in Kids in the Hall, because they had no women in the troupe, which I, you know, you could argue about that if you want. When they needed a woman in the sketch, they would just do it. And if the woman's character in the sketch was to be played straight, they would do that.
Yeah.
And like you said, commit. So,
you know what's funny?
Yeah.
In the new season, this is how you know this new season's good.
Yeah.
At the end of episode 2, and I haven't seen all of them yet, but at the end of episode 2, they do a Zoom sketch.
Yeah.
And how many times over the past 2 years have you seen a Zoom sketch come in and been like, oh, fucking
right.
Zoom sketch? And this was like the funniest Zoom sketch.
It really was good.
I've seen.
It was like, you're masturbating.
And again, not only was it a Zoom sketch, how many people have done the you're masturbating on Zoom sketch?
Right.
And, like, they did the best one.
Right, and their premise was, we've got this new technology that it knows when you're masturbating and the screen is red. And then first, like, one guy does, and then another person does, and he's like, ah, this meeting's out of control. Everybody's masturbating. All right, let's all just masturbate. And then they all just jerk off.
Yeah, but they linger like for the whole end credits.
Yeah, yeah. It's,
you're just watching them.
It's hilarious. It's fucking so good. Do you have a favorite cast member?
I mean, I would have to agree with you that it was probably Scott Thompson. Because, again, he's the one that would be on Conan the most. He's the one that stood out because he was gay. Like, and because he was gay, like, at that time, it also kind of meant, this isn't because he was gay, but, like, just because of who he was, he would always be the most unafraid to, like, get out there and, like, offend the audience. Or, like,
do something.
Like, when, even when he was on Conan, he would do, like, gay jokes. And the audience would be like, ah, oh, he'd be like, oh, right. Stop it. Like,
Right. Yeah, he was very, I mean, the story that they tell of, like, the sketch, it was originally two-man groups. They formed, and then they were doing a show, and Scott Thompson heckled them. Mm-hmm. And then he got in. And then they were, that was the five of them.
Imagine being that good that you heckle a group and they're like, we gotta get this.
Yeah, he heckled them and ruined their bit because they had a bit where they were like, they taped donuts under the seats and he just found it early and he was like, what the fuck? And he just threw it at them and like, he ruined the sketch. But somehow they're like, all right, great. Be in the show now. I've got, I just have these little notes. So a really fun setup payoff is the villain Don, his lackey Marv, his best memory is
peeing in his coffee.
Is it peeing or is it someone jerking off in it? I've still never known, because it's like,
I assumed it was peeing because I, and maybe it's just,
but
like,
but why wouldn't, doesn't it make sense for it to be like cappuccino cream?
But see, this is, then I may be completely misremembering this, like this is somewhere like we'd have to roll the tape.
I watched it like a few times recently.
I thought the tell was like, you could hear like someone tinkling in a cup.
Yeah, but also he's like, because it's not Marv, it's some guy, I guess he's paid, and he's like, come on already. And then you hear a little tinkle, so it makes me go, oh, is he jerking off? But anyway, that's the setup.
Someone does something with their penis to his coffee.
That's the setup, and then later you see Don's happiest memory when he takes it, and it's just him drinking the coffee, and he's like, you know, it's the little things in life. It's the little things in life that bring you great coffee, Marv. That's hilarious. Another good thing I like from the beginning is they're like, they need to downsize the pharma company. So they have basically, they set up a sort of sketch thing where they keep interviewing different scientists about what they're doing. One guy's making a pill that gives worms to ex-girlfriends. He's like, could it give worms to ex-boyfriends? And he's like, this is a pill to give worms to ex-girlfriends. What don't you get? And then Scott Thompson is like, Don created Stummies, which is supposed to be like Tums, and he's like, I'm working on something a lot like Stummies, and he's like, tell me about it. He's like, oh, well, it's exactly like Stummies. It's a bigger pill, and he's like, are there side effects? And he's like, yeah, there's a few side effects, and then they're like, you know, a few side effects is no big deal, as long as there's no flipper babies, and then everybody's like, ha, 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 ha. And then Scott Thompson's like, well, there were a few flipper babies. I mean, that's dark. I mean, like, think about that. That's the beginning of the movie. We've just made a joke about children being born with flippers instead of hands because they were... Because
they wanted to make it a tummy drug.
Right, because it was a trial of a fucking... I mean, so good. So good.
Also, I'm assuming, end this episode, it should be known, if you want to watch Brain Candy, nobody's taking it off YouTube anytime soon. Like, it's on there.
It's on YouTube. But that's the only place you could get it. You can buy a DVD, or do they have a Blu-ray?
I think, yes.
There is some disc media.
Yeah, you can buy a physical copy of it. No problem.
It's not streaming anywhere. Except YouTube.
That's the weird thing, like, because Amazon has all the seasons of the show now.
Right.
And this new season, and a documentary. But they don't have Brain Candy.
Right. I was shocked that it was hard to... I was just saying this recently when I was talking and...
But also someone uploaded all the episodes of the old show, all five seasons to YouTube, so...
Oh, there you go. Enjoy yourself.
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing when it's like, nobody cares. When like a feature film made by a studio is just on YouTube and literally no one gives a shit. There's no copyright claim.
Yeah.
It's crazy, but you know, what sucks is it's not great quality, you know, right. And I think it's actually a good looking film. because there's a ton of handheld stuff. There's a lot of really good compositions. In the beginning of their sketch show, it was a lot of, there was actually a live audience. So like SNL, you would actually hear laughter and hear real responses. But then they would do like, you know, outdoor stuff, which again, like SNL would be filmed. But then that stuff got more and more sophisticated and they leaned on it more. And then the guy who directed all that stuff directed the movie. So, like, they kind of evolved from, like, beginning as a stage show and then kind of doing a stage show on TV to understanding how to do it with film.
Right.
And I think it's actually a good looking... I mean, you can tell it's cheap. You can tell there's not a lot of money. But I think it's a good look. And it just, in terms of cinematography, I think it's a well-shot movie.
Yeah. It's there. Its place in history is in the pantheon of... Basically, there could be a box set of 90s comedies that didn't get the editing treatment they deserved, yeah, or the budget or the release.
Right.
Like, there's that. There's Dirty Work.
Yeah.
There's, again, the Mystery Science Theater movie.
Right, right.
There's a couple other ones that you could probably lump in there.
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you, one of the things that I think works the least, or to me is like, oh, this is not good and it also doesn't track, is... at the end of the film, our protagonist, sort of, the Dr. Chris, is, you know, he's in front of a big press conference and he's like, you know what? Because that's what he sounds. He's like, you know what? Maybe it's okay to be sad sometimes, huh? Why do you have to be happy all the time? And it's like, I get the ideology that you're pushing, but that's not what you did wrong. What you did wrong was you pushed it out without testing it. And then, right. And then when it was successful, you made it over the counter instead of just prescription. Like... he makes it like his whole quest of making an antidepressant was from the get-go bad. And it's like, that doesn't really track. That's not the film I just watched. The film I just watched is about corporate negligence and greed. Right. Not about...
like, there was horrible oversight and this drug puts people in comas, basically.
Right. Like, if you had tested it, you would probably be okay. Like, he makes it like, oh, just the very idea of it is... but again, that's very 90s. It was very... but you know... people were like, oh no, Prozac, man, it turns you to a drone. And I remember, you know, when I went on Prozac, I felt like, I felt more like me than ever. Cause I felt like the me that I'm in my most happy days. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not like happy all the time, but like it just levels you out more. So I remember feeling like the clouds went away and I could be me more often.
Right.
Like, I don't feel like I'm not me. But now, that was the rap on it, you know?
Now, to be fair, in the 90s, though, you're forgetting one big part of the Prozac equation, which was people at the time did, some of them, take Prozac like it was fucking candy.
Really? I don't remember this.
That was a huge part of the pro, where, like, people would, like, put Prozac into stuff like it was edibles.
Really?
And basically, put themselves on a regimen. But, you know,
it doesn't work that way, though. It's got to build up in your system. It takes like weeks for it to work. It doesn't have a... in the film, the minute you take the medicine, right, you immediately unlock your memory. But that's the thing. A lot of people had no idea, you know?
That's what I'm saying. Like, people didn't know that. And they were like, you know, I could see how someone sees someone in their family like chugging Prozac. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Hold on a second.
Like, it's also very hippy-dippy. Like, hey, man, they're selling happiness. They fucking took it from you and I'm going to sell it back to you, man. It's a lot of that kind of shit. I mean, all said... oh, here's... I have a question for you, because I don't understand even what the joke is here. The marketing guy, Cisco, he tells a story earlier on about a bird hitting his window, and then later on, just a bird flies into his eye, and he's like, ah, there's something in my eye! And then for the rest of the film, he's got an eye patch, and I don't know what the bit is there.
I don't either.
I don't get it. I'm like, what... and I feel like there's something there that I'm not getting.
Maybe it was like something that was cut.
Maybe. Or I don't know. Or it's just, you know, surreal nonsense. I don't know. It's
probably just some surreal nonsense.
Oh, by the way, it was originally called The Drug. And they were like, you can't call your movie The Drug. But you could tell that's the name of it because in the film, most people just call it The Drug. Oh, he's on The Drug. Are you on The Drug? Yeah. Kids of the Whole Brain Candy from 1996. Watch it on YouTube.com. You'll love it or not, you know. You know, do
but
you
know what? It's for free on YouTube, so you can't complain.
Yeah, yeah, you're getting it for free. Vin, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
Vin, what's your happiest memory?
What's my happiest memory? Oh, Jesus Christ! Why? I have no fucking clue.
I know. I couldn't do that either. What would be my happiest? It would probably be something more, not that I drink piss, but it would probably be something more like Don's, where it's just like a one moment of like drinking a coffee and being like, ah.
Like something where you were just at like complete peace.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like a moment of like, you know, calmness.
Yeah, something like, oh, I was at a Christmas party and like school was over for the year, you know, for the year. And, like I had no worries. Like,
yeah. Anyway, we end the episode by saying
go bye-bye.